Syra is a fictional character, but what they went through is happening across West Midlands today. This is their story. In Birmingham Yardley, one of the most deprived constituencies in England, qualified care workers cannot afford to take care jobs while residential homes struggle with staff shortages and elderly residents wait for the support they need. The people exist, the training exists, the need exists, but the wages are kept artificially low by funding decisions made in Westminster. Here's what happened when Syra tried to bridge that gap.
I'm Syra, I'm 35, and I live in Birmingham Yardley, where I grew up. My parents came here from Pakistan in the 1980s and ran a corner shop on the Coventry Road until my dad's arthritis got too bad. When my mum developed dementia, I watched her fade away in a care home where the staff barely had time to learn her name. They weren't bad people, they were just stretched so thin that every shift was a marathon. That's when I decided to retrain as a care worker myself. I wanted to be the person who had time to hold someone's hand, who could remember that Mrs. Khan liked her tea with two sugars and that Mr. Williams always asked about the cricket scores. I had a teenage son and was working nights at Asda to pay the bills, but I enrolled at Birmingham Metropolitan College for my NVQ Level 2 in Health and Social Care. For 18 months, I studied during the day, worked at night, and snatched sleep when I could. The course was brilliant, the tutors believed in us, and when I passed in 2019, I felt ready to make a real difference. I applied to Sanctuary Care first because they had a position at their residential home in Yardley, just 20 minutes from where I lived. The manager interviewed me and said I was exactly what they were looking for, someone with life experience who genuinely cared about elderly people's dignity. Then she offered me £8.50 per hour. I stared at her, thinking I'd misheard. At Asda, I was earning £9.20 for night shifts, plus unsocial hours payments that took me to nearly £11. This was qualified work, with real responsibility for people's well-being, and it paid less than stocking shelves. I explained my situation and asked if there was room to negotiate. She looked genuinely apologetic and said, "I wish I could pay you more, but this is what the council contract allows us. We'd go out of business if we paid above it." So I tried Birmingham City Council's direct care team. At least they were the ones setting the rates, maybe they'd value their own staff properly. The woman in HR was friendly but blunt. "Our recruitment is frozen, the budget has been cut, and we cannot afford to take on new care workers." I asked when the freeze might lift. She said she honestly didn't know. It depended on next year's settlement from central government. I tried four more private care homes across Birmingham Yardley over the next 2 months. Ashcroft Care Home, Meadowbank Residential, St. Mary's Care Centre, Cherry Tree Lodge. Every single one offered between £8,050 and £19 per hour. The manager at Ashcroft was the most honest about why. She sat me down with a cup of tea and opened her books. "Look," she said, "the council pays us £12 per hour per resident for care, but the actual cost of providing proper care is £18 per hour minimum. We subsidise the difference through property values, family top-ups, and basically paying our staff as little as we legally can. There is no funding for what this job is actually worth." I walked home past the old Acox Green Training Centre, the place where my mum's generation of care workers had learned their trade. It was boarded up now, but someone had left the old sign outside. "Care Worker Training Courses. Inquire within." I stood there, looking at this locked building where people used to train for jobs that apparently no longer paid enough to live on. That's when I started talking to my neighbours properly. Mrs. Ahmed next door mentioned her daughter was unemployed and had care experience but couldn't find work that paid enough. At the corner shop, I got chatting to three more people from our street who'd trained as carers but ended up signing on because they couldn't afford to take the jobs. One of them, Yasmin, had worked in care homes for 5 years before her rent went up, and she had to choose between care work and keeping her flat. 20 people from my street alone were unemployed, and here we had care homes with vacancies they couldn't fill at wages that kept qualified people on benefits. The pieces didn't fit. If there was no money, where were all these empty training places I kept hearing about? If the need was so desperate, why were the wages so low? If the government was worried about unemployment, why were they keeping people out of work by underfunding the jobs? I finally got the answer from a council worker I met at my son's school. She worked in adult social care and was frustrated enough to tell me the truth. "The Treasury caps our budget increases at 2% per year," she said, "but care costs have risen 8% this year alone. Staff wages, energy bills, insurance, everything that actually costs money to run a care home. But Westminster acts like we can just magic up care workers who'll work for 2019 wages in 2024. They create the shortage, then blame us for not meeting demand. It hit me then. This wasn't about money at all. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here in Birmingham Yardley, still watching, still ready to do this work when the wages match the value. I understand now that this isn't just my story or even just about care work. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare.
What Syra experienced has a name, logical fallacy. A false analogy is when someone compares two fundamentally different things and draws conclusions that don't follow. For example, saying, "My goldfish died when I overfed it, so the ocean must be dying because there are too many fish," treats a goldfish bowl and an ocean as the same thing because both contain water. They're not remotely comparable. The household budget myth is exactly this kind of false analogy. Every time someone told Syra there is no money, they were treating the UK government like a household that has to earn pounds before it can spend them. But households don't issue currency. The UK government does. When your household runs out of pounds, you have to stop spending. When the UK government decides to spend pounds, it creates them. The real constraints in Syra's story were never financial. They were physical. Did qualified care workers exist? Yes. Did residential homes need staff? Yes. Did elderly residents need care? Yes. The only thing that was rationed was the political willingness to connect these resources through adequate spending. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Birmingham Yardley ranks 8. Out of 543 English constituencies for deprivation, placing it in the most deprived 10% nationally, English Indices of Deprivation 20-25, MHCLG. The constituency has 2,357 registered charities, Charity Commission Register. Total grants received by organisations in Birmingham Yardley amount to £52.1 million, 360 giving grant nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics produced by Blocked Britain.